Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, chapter 12, text 67, 68, and 69, the last three verses of the 12th chapter. And we'll chant the Sanskrit on 67. I should say I will attempt to chant the Sanskrit on 67. I took a little tutoring just a moment or two ago from Nagaraj, which will probably have no benefit at all. Raghunath Das Goswami, no, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami had the unique ability to chant the Bhagavatam, and it was either three or five different melodies for the pleasure of Mahaprabhu. Four different melodies for the pleasure of Mahaprabhu. And I have the inability to chant a single melody for the pleasure of Mahaprabhu. Tamaham ajam anantam atma tattvam jagat udaya asti sama matma shaktim dyupati bi aja shakra shankara dyair Durva vasita stavamachutam natosmi. Tamaham majam anantam atma tattvam. Jagat udaya stiti samaya matma saktim. Dupati bir aja shakra shankara dyair. Duravasita stavam achutam natosmi.
Sakra Sankarate.
Tum. To him. Aham. I. Ajam. To the unborn. Anantam. The unlimited. Atmatattvam. The original supersoul. Jagat. Of the material universe. Udaya. The creation. Stiti. Maintenance. Samyama. And destruction. Atmashaktim. By whose personal energies. Dui Patibu. By the masters of heaven. Aja Shakra Shankara Adyai. Headed by Brahma, Indra, and Shiva. Duravasita. Incomprehensible. Stavam. Whose praise. Achuktam. To the infallible Supreme Lord. Nata. Bowed down. Asmin. I am. Translation. I bow down to that unborn and infinite supreme soul whose personal energies affect the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material universe. Even Brahma, Indra, and Shankar, and the other lords of the heavenly planets cannot fathom the glories of that infallible personality of Godhead. Please repeat. I bow down to that unborn and infinite supreme soul. Whose personal energies affect the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material universe. Even Brahma, Indra, Shankar, and the other lords of the heavenly planets cannot fathom the glories of that infallible personality of Godhead. Following verse 68, I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the eternal Lord and the leader of all other deities, who by evolving his nine material energies has arranged within himself the abode of all moving and non-moving creatures, and who is always situated in pure transcendental consciousness. And verse 69. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, the son of Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami. It is he who defeats all inauspicious things within the universe. Although in the beginning he was absorbed in the happiness of Brahman realization and was living in a secluded place, giving up all other types of consciousness, he became attracted by the pleasing, most melodious pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna. He therefore mercifully spoke the Supreme Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the bright light of the absolute truth and which describes the activities of the Lord, purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Without offering respectful obeisances to Sukadeva Goswami and other great acharyas in his line, one cannot possibly gain the privilege of entering into the deep transcendental meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. Thus ends the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 12th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Topics of Srimad Bhagavatam Summarized. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksuhun Melitam Yinatasmai Sri Gurudeva Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarina Vancha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindhu bahevacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sridharahar Srivasati Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Interesting line in this purport of this third verse. Without offering respectful obeisances to the spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami, the other acharyas it mentions by name, one cannot possibly, it doesn't mean that one needs to do it. If one does it, it's good. One cannot possibly gain the privilege of entering into the deep transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam. It reminds me of the verse, I believe it was yesterday, a brahmana who diligently reads this essential compilation of all the Puranas will go to the supreme destination, which the Supreme Lord himself has described. The key word in that phrase is prayata. It's translated in the English there as diligently, and the word for word is translated as carefully. Carefully and diligently, one must study the Srimad Bhagavatam and offer respects to the spiritual master. Otherwise, one cannot obtain the transcendental understanding of it. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, Srimad Bhagavatam. So on Vyaspuja Day, Nagaraj and I were talking. I was complimenting him on his class earlier in the week and speaking about the deficiencies of my own class just a bit prior to that. And we both kind of chuckled and shared the same distress that one feels when speaking from verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam that have no purports, and how it just kind of leaves the field wide open for whatever direction you figure out how to go, since there are no purports. I imagine if we were able to study the purports of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and his translation of the Bhagavatam, there's probably some better direction there. And of course, since Srila Prabhupada departed from us earlier than this, we don't have his own information there. But nonetheless, it is a challenge many times when there are these verses with no purports to find a focal point that is relative to what the subject matter being discussed is. But after all, that is the purpose of our speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam daily amongst Vaishnavas. That's what we do this for the purpose of realizations and sharing our understandings. This is the principle by which Srila Prabhupada established the speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam on a daily basis. Of course, this was established long before Prabhupada gave it to us, but this concept of Nitya Bhagavata, daily speaking, eternally speaking, always speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, discussing it, sharing our realizations, sharing our understandings. This is an important factor. I often think of the distress and embarrassment of those devotees that would have had to speak in front of Prabhupada. Prabhupada would sometimes do that. So now you speak the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada's sitting right there, and you're supposed to speak about the Bhagavatam in front of the person, Bhagavat. You know, and this was early on in the movement. This isn't like after we've been devotees for 40 or 50 years and we've got some so-called ripened, mature knowledge. You know, been devotees 4 or 5 months. You know, maybe in some cases 4 years, and Prabhupada sitting there and asking you to speak on the Bhagavatam. So, very challenging to do, but this was part of Prabhupada's preaching tool, part of his training efforts for us in coming in contact with the Bhagavatam and learning how to disseminate it. First, by learning how to disseminate it to each other. This is an essential thing, being able to share the Bhagavatam with each other. If we're not able to share it with each other, where we have a interested, likely audience on the topic, then how will we become more capable of sharing it with those that have no genuine interest, but that we're trying to get interested? So, and anyway, this is the purpose of having these daily Bhagavatam classes, is to come to this kind of a realization. So, I also was, I noted the mention of Vyaspuja in Prabhupada Priya Dasi's class yesterday, comparing the process of fasting on Janmashtami and all through the night, and then a little break, and then fasting, and you know, and Vyaspuja, to the process of appreciating the sincere taste of Srimad Bhagavatam. It sounded like somebody had a very practical understanding of the application of that particular example. Anyway, so these last three verses in this chapter, they give us a very clear example of how we must approach the Lord. And it's shown in these two particular Sanskrit words, namaha and nataha, by offering obeisances and bowing down, or by bowing down and offering obeisances, whichever order there. In other words, it's required that we submit ourselves to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that we submit ourselves to the Lord. Now, this idea of submission or submitting ourselves in our modern society is not very popular at all. We're afraid that by submitting, it means that we're going to lose something. That we're, lose what? Our so-called control. We think we're in control of so many things and of our situation, and if I submit to someone else, I'll lose that control. And worse yet, once I lose that control, then I'll be exploited. Because no one wants to be exploited. There are endless poems and songs written over the course of the industrialized history of our Western world, concern with the workers' exploitation and the rights of the workers and so on like this. You know, regardless of what genre you draw it from, there are many, many songs like this. And these all address a very real issue, the exploitation of people below us, whoever us might be. And so because of this concept, which is, by the way, inherent with our existence in the material world, because of this, people are not very anxious to take up the process of submission, to humbly place themselves in the care, in the direction, in the guidance of another person. Whether we do it humbly or not, we're ultimately going to have to do it. You know, the body is going to force us to submit. The weather is going to force us to submit. So it shouldn't be that far of a stretch of our imagination that we may have to submit in other areas of our life as well. So this fear is based on not wanting to be exploited. Ultimately, we want a submissive relationship with someone that will care for us, with someone that will provide for us, with someone that will have our best interest at heart. But because of our experience in the material world, we're very fearful of this. Therefore, we don't want to do it. Now, we haven't seen this mood of exploitation by the Lord in the previous 11 cantos. Neither have we seen it in the previous chapters of this 12th canto. Any example of the Lord exploiting the living entity, of the Lord taking advantage of the living entity, of the Lord using for his own means with no benefit for the living entity, we don't see this anywhere. Rather, we see that the Lord is known as Dinabandhu, the friend of the devotee. Now, this Dinabandhu is translated in a number of different ways. One place Prabhupada translated as friend of the poor living entity. Friend of the poor living entity. Okay, if you're financially poor, you certainly want someone who's a benefactor to be your friend. If you're spiritually poor, you certainly want someone who's a benefactor to be your friend. Or maybe you're just poor because it's a real shame that you're stuck here in the material world. You know, my mother would sometimes say like that when I'd complain, oh, poor you, it's so hard being you. I'm sure we've all had that experience, you know. Because none of us really, as Prabhupada say, you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth in this Western countries. You know, we have so much, and then we would complain, you know, oh, poor you. So also in that sense, friend of the poor living entity, stuck in the material world, well, you have a friend. That friend is Krishna. So even if it's all three of those, financially, spiritually, and just destitute, I mean, not destitute, but disturbed, you know, being in this, still, Krishna is Dinabandhu. He's our friend. He's there to look out for us. He's there that we can turn to him. He's there that we can get solace from him. He's there that we can feel comforted by him. This is Dinabandhu. There is no mood of exploitation. We don't see this. He will not cheat us. He will not exploit us. Therefore, yes, namaha nataha, bow down and submit. There's a good friend of mine that I can't give too many details. It'll tell the whole embarrassing side of it. But the conclusion of one circumstance we found ourselves in was, he said, you know, in the Bhagavatam, when the Brahmastra came, it was recommended to Arjuna just bow down. And Arjuna bowed down, and the Brahmastra went right over the top. Didn't affect him. Just bow down, you know, and these influences will pass over you because you'll be at the lotus feet of the Lord. Submit yourself to the lotus feet of the Lord. So this was his explanation when the Brahmastra of different influences, let's just leave it at that, come, just bow down. Things will go much better. So we start benefiting bow down. So, and aside from that, we're already under control. We may not like to admit it, but we are under control. Prabhupada says in one lecture in 73 in Los Angeles, he says, so there is Rishikesh, Krishna. He is the supreme controller. Rishi means the senses. So we are enjoying our senses, but ultimately, the controller of all the senses is Krishna. Suppose this is my hand. I am claiming this is my hand. I shall give it a good fist to you if you do not. And then Prabhupada stops. He says, I'm very much proud of my hand, but I'm not the controller. Krishna is the controller. If he withdraws the power of activity in the arm, then you become paralyzed. Although you are claiming it is my hand, I shall use it against you, you become paralyzed. You cannot do anything. Therefore, I may have possessed the hand by the grace of Krishna, but I am not the controller. Krishna is the controller. So we're already being controlled. So since we're being controlled, why not just submit? Why not just submit to that person who's controlling us? We can't challenge that position. Prabhupada continues on. He said, God means there is no equal. There is no one greater. That is God. There cannot be any competition. You are God, I am God, he is God, he is God, she is God. No, these are all dogs. They are not God. God means without competition. God is one. Nobody is greater than him. Nobody is equal to him. Everyone is lower. The only master is Krishna, and everyone else is servant. Never mind, even if one is Brahma or Shiva, big, big demigods, what to speak of the others? So clearly, we see both from our circumstance and from Prabhupada's explanation here, we're already lower than God, so why not bow down to him? What harm is there in that? That process of bowing down, it fosters in us a mood of humility, which is necessary. Now, in that class there, Prabhupada, in that last sentence of that point there, Prabhupada says, doesn't matter if you're Brahma, Shiva, or some big, big demigod. And then just after that line, he says, in the Shastra, it is said that he is offered respect, the Lord, by Lord Brahma and by Lord Shiva. They are the topmost of demigods. Above the human beings, there are demigods. And we are all human beings, above the lower creatures, the lower animals. Similarly, above us are the demigods. And the most important of them is Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma is the creator of the universe, and Lord Shiva is the destroyer of the universe. So we can look at that statement, and we can conclude, if we have even just the slightest bit of analytical nature, okay, the topmost personalities in the universe, the ones that create and destroy everything, they're bowing down to the personality of Godhead. So why shouldn't I? Why shouldn't I bow down? I mean, after all, what do Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva do? They create and destroy everything. And we think we've got such a big job to do. You know, oh, it's so difficult doing this. Whatever our job is, whatever the task is, oh, it's too hot to do it. It's too much labor to do it. It's too many, not enough hours to do it. It's just, I haven't got enough people to, you know, we have a million excuses why our job is so difficult. But here, creating and destroying the entire universe, we think our job is difficult. But those people that this creation and destruction energy, Prabhupada says, this is just the personal energy of the Supreme Lord. It's in this verse right here, just the personal energy of the Supreme Lord. This great ability to destroy and create everything, it's just the personal energy of the Lord. So here again, if the people that are doing this are bowing down, why don't we bow down? Now, In this verse here at the end, the name of Lord Indra is introduced. And the mood of, let me just say that Indra and Brahma and Shiva, it mentions in this verse, they cannot understand the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's beyond their capabilities to understand his infinite glories. Now, during the pastimes of Braja, in Braja, this was made very clear. Of course, we know that Brahma tried to put forward his superiority, so he captured all the cows and all the cowherd boys. He took them and hid them. He thought, I'll spoil the fun of this Krishna. Everybody thinks this child Krishna is such a big deal. I'll spoil all the fun. But what happened? Krishna instead just became all those cows and cowherd boys, which was really quite amazing, because first of all, this confused Brahma like anything. Wait a minute, I just took them all here, but they're all right there. Sometimes it happens, I saw the keys to the car are there, but I thought I'd just put them over there. You know, and at a certain age, you do this quite often. Oh, the keys, anyway. So this was Brahma's predicament. Oh, wait, I got the coward boys and the cow, but they're over. So he's very confused how this is happening. But there was a more subtle thing that Krishna did in this particular pastime. He fulfilled the desire of all the mothers of Braj, both human and cow, because all the mothers of Braj were just enchanted by Krishna. Oh, I wish he was my son. Oh, he's such a wonderful son. I wish I had a son like that. They were all thinking like this. And the cows, they were giving all of their milk. Oh, this is for Krishna. Sure, yes, yes, take this for Krishna. So Krishna satisfied them. He bewildered Brahma Vimohan. He bewildered Brahma and at the same time satisfied all the desires of the mothers of Braj by becoming their children for one entire year, not just a day. And what happened during that year? The love that the mothers felt for their children intensified beyond all understanding because they were loving Krishna. And what happens when you love Krishna? Krishna reciprocates. And then with that reciprocation from Krishna, you feel more love for Krishna. You want to love him even more. And then when you love Krishna even more, Krishna reciprocates even more. And then you feel even, and so on like this. So for one year, this exchange went back and forth. And the mothers of Vrindavan were just so overwhelmed. An amazing pastime. So, you know, this idea of understanding the pastimes of the Lord, but Brahma couldn't do it. And what can we say about Indra? He's my introduction to bring Giriraj into the class. So just as Krishna taught Arjuna in a very harsh environment, you might say, about not worshiping the demigods, so little Krishna taught Nanda Baba and all the residents, no, don't worship Indra. Worship Govardhan Hill. Indra, what does Indra do? It rains whether Indra's there or not. But Govardhan Hill, we get so much nice grass, so many pleasing flowers for worshiping the Lord, so much shade from the nice trees, the sound of the waterfalls tumbling, oh, it's just so wonderful. And the birds that are chirping on Govardhan Hill, oh, it's like, that, everything about Govardhan Hill is just, so we should worship Govardhan Hill instead. So he encouraged. His presentation was so accurate, so pleasing, so solid, that the cowherd men had to relinquish. Okay, we're not going to worship Indra. We'll worship Govardhan Hill. All right, we'll do that. After all, Govardhan Hill fulfills all our desires. This is Krishna's point. You worship Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill fulfills all our desires. Govardhana medyushitam labhishtam. May Govardhan Hill fulfill all my desires. Right there. This is the prayer at the final line of the Govardhan Ashtakam, all eight verses, not the ninth one, of course, but all eight verses, the final line, Govardhana medyushitam abhishtam. May Govardhan Hill fulfill all my desires. Now, of course, one has to be very careful. What are those desires? You know? So we have to be a little thoughtful. Like that. But at any rate, Krishna taught them, yes, you worship Govardhan Hill. And, of course, Indra didn't like that. He didn't understand that. He was thinking, no, well, who is this little cowherd boy? I'm Indra. He couldn't understand, just as his verse says, he couldn't understand the unlimited pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, Krishna saw the degree of pride that was there in Indra. Most of the demigods, and no disrespect, I don't want to get struck down on lightning on my way home, but most of the demigods have some pride. They're very proud. It's one of the defects of getting that kind of a position to become. So if they're very dear to Krishna, he removes that pride. And that's what he did in the case of, you know, Indra. And what happened then? Well, we all know the story very well. I could spend another two classes talking about that. But finally, he surrenders to the Lord. And why did Indra surrender to the Lord? Well, that explanation is given by Nayanabhata Goswami. Govardhana Giri Tubhyam Gopanam Sarva Rakshaka Namaste Deva Rupaya Devanam Shukadayine. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Giri Govardhan, who is the protector of the Brajbasis. He is the Lord himself and gives pleasure to the demigods. So Krishna gives pleasure. Govardhan Hill gives pleasure to the demigods. So why shouldn't Indra surrender? Because by surrendering, then he got so much satisfaction. So Giriraj not only satisfies the cows, not only satisfies the gopas and gopis, not only satisfies all the residents of Braj, but he also satisfies the demigods. So, here again, how do they get that? By bowing down. So, anyway, back to the verse. Amanataha, bowing down and offering obeisances. So, now the second verse, it mentions here that the Lord is Sanatana Rishabhya Surya, that he's the eternal leader, the eternal Lord and leader of all other deities. Now, there are many personalities that we'll see deity forms of, but these are not necessarily eternal forms. You can go to any temple and find deities with so many different demigods and, you know, so on like that. But these are not eternal deities. These are not eternal personalities. The demigods, they're practically eternal by our standards, yes, but in reality, they have a beginning and an end. They have a finite period of time at which they are no longer present. So this is why the Lord says, don't worship them. They're not eternal. And there are many temples where you can find all the different demigods represented. There's one very nice temple in South Atlanta, just a little outside the city. When I used to travel to Atlanta a lot, I'd always stop there. It's a very nice South Indian temple, and they have one entire section of all the different demigods are represented. So that's nice, but these are temporary gods. You know, there's one Indian man that has established an altar to Trump. He considers Trump to be some type of incarnation, and he worships him every day. So, I mean, so many temporary gods are there. But this verse says, Krishna is the eternal Lord. Now, as the eternal Lord, he arranges to show his nine material energies. I must admit, I struggled a little bit with figuring out these nine material energies. I came up with some guesses: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. Sesha suggested maybe the ninth is the pradana. So, at any rate, any of you that know them, my obeisances to you. The point being that just to show that he is the eternal Lord and that he is the leader of all deities, he arranges for his nine material energies within himself to be the abode of all moving and non-moving living beings. So each of us have a few moving living beings in our existence, some of them beneficial, most of them not. But the fact of the matter is that this is the real kicker in this verse, that the Lord is always, I repeat the word, always situated in pure transcendental consciousness. I'm not sure about any of you, but I know for a fact that I'm not in pure transcendental consciousness all day, all the time. Jeez, I'm barely in transcendental consciousness a teeny tiny part of the time. I mean, we struggle daily, we struggle hourly, we struggle by the minute to keep our head above the water of material influence and be transcendental. And usually, We fail horribly at it. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is always situated in pure transcendental consciousness. Therefore, Namahanata, bow down and offer obeisances. So hopefully we're getting the message being imparted in these verses here, that we should bow down and offer obeisances to the Lord. And then this final verse for today, there's a combination of Sanskrit words here that's very, very nice. It's a very long Sanskrit verse, which I didn't even attempt to chant, but Ajita Ruchira Lila Akrishta, attracted by the pleasing pastimes of Sri Krishna. Very wonderful to be attracted by the pleasing pastimes of Sri Krishna. And who was attracted in this verse? Sukadeva Goswami is being mentioned. Such a powerful personality. Sukadeva Goswami is one of our 12 Mahajans, very important individual. He's the spiritual master of the speaker of Bhagavatam, as we're hearing it, Sukadeva Goswami. And this is an amazing description in this last verse here, that Sukadeva Goswami removes anything inauspicious in the entire universe. Sometimes when someone comes, they remove inauspiciousness in the area they're at. Sometimes someone has the ability to bring auspiciousness to a particular assembly. Sukadeva Goswami removes inauspiciousness in the entire universe. That's a powerful personality. It mentions in the verse, he was quite happy. In the verse says, let me just get this. Living in a secluded place. In the womb of his mother for 16 years. You don't get more secluded than that. Right? Sometimes when I'm in Woodstock, people ask questions like, is it okay to perform, Kundalini yoga? So I'll tell them, well, one of the qualifications is you have to live in a secluded place unaffected by outside influences. So I think all of us are just qualified in that sense. There's a few other things I say. But, so Sukadeva Goswami is a very secluded place, very happy in the womb, fixed in impersonal Brahman realization. I'm here, I'm out there, it doesn't matter, so I'll just stay put. But then what happened? He heard his father speaking the pastimes of the Lord. He heard Srila Vyasadeva speaking these wonderful pastimes. And he said, I'll come out. There's something more than what I'm experiencing in here. And then what did he do once he came out after hearing this message? This is the important part. He spoke it to others. He went to the assembly and he spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages where the passing of Kripa Maharaj was. So this is a significant point for us. It's a very significant point for us because we've heard the message of Srimad Bhagavatam from Srila Prabhupada, who is the bona fide representative of Sukadeva Goswami. What did Prabhupada do when he heard that message? He took that message and brought it to us. So what do we do when we hear that message? We take that message and give it to others. It's very important that we speak the message of Srimad Bhagavatam to other people. This is the line of Sukadeva Goswami. This is the line of Mahaprabhu. This is the line of Srila Prabhupada. To share this message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, sometimes you do it by direct preaching. Sometimes you do it simply by the example we set leading our life as a Vaishnava. Sometimes we do it by encouraging persons in the process of purification they're going through, but we have to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have to share that message of the Bhagavatam. So this is the important point I feel made in this last verse of this chapter, is how important it is for us to, once we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, to share it. So as we close these final few days of this 12th canto, got just a bare amount of time more. The class schedule was sent out, those of us that are on that email, the class schedule was sent out that will be beginning first canto and what the structure for that will be, because that first canto, as we all know, Prabhupada, as he said, I put everything there. And some of those purports are 6, 8, 10 pages long. So as we return to that place from which we all started, namely the first canto, and we prepare for Prabhupada's glorious purports, that can be a refueling station for us, if you will, a refueling station to want to speak more of the wonderful words of Srila Prabhupada and the Srimad Bhagavatam and assist in bringing about that golden age of Kali Yuga for all those poor living entities who are stuck here in this age and have not yet, like our fortunate selves, had the opportunity to come in contact with Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll finish there. I've got just a very few short minutes. I have to head off to work, so if anybody has any questions or comments, I'll just take a couple otherwise. Yes, Mother Ragatmaka?
In the purport, it says, without offering obeisances to Suta Goswami, correct?
Sukadev.
Oh, Sukadev. Okay. I guess I haven't been offering obeisances to Sukadev Goswami before our Bhagavatam class.
You are. You're offering obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, who's his bona fide representative.
Okay.
You offer obeisances to the Bhagavatam itself, which is being spoken by Sukadev Goswami.
Okay.
Don't short sell yourself. Frank Govinda Prabhu?
The reason Sukadev Goswami came out from the womb was not because he was meditating there, because he had a fear of the material existence and he didn't want to come out.
Mm.
And Prabhupada also mentioned that even Vyasdev counseled him, but he was not convinced to come out. So then Vyasdev asked him, who do you trust? Because Vyasdev was married. He said, I only trust Vasudev, Krishna. So Vyasdev has to invite Lord Krishna to come and gave him assurance that when you come out, you will not be under the influence of Maya. Mm-hmm. Then he came out. Mm-hmm. But when he came out, the first canto, second chapter, few verses, Jampra Vrajanta Manupeta Manupeta Krittam, those verses say that as soon as he came out, he left.
Mm-hmm.
And Vyasdev cried out and he was running after. Remember those painting that Sukadev, girls did not feel any
embarrassment
when Sukadev naked was walking by, but for Vyasdev they covered their body. So he did not just come easily. It was like a whole episode that he has to send so many messengers, and he was in the forest. And he came back because of the attraction of Bhagavatam. And there's just in a short like one thing that when he heard from this hunter about the beautiful song, Vyasdev used to teach them to repeat so that he could hear, because he didn't know exactly where the location he's hiding. So he said, the Lord is Kangba Dayalu Saranam Bhajema, that who will be more merciful than, first was that he is the most beautiful, most attractive. So then Sukadev Goswami came out. He asked him, where did you hear this? He said, I heard this from Badrikashram, a great place. He didn't tell about his father. So then he says, well, that's very nice, most attractive, but is he merciful to me? Then I will be attractive. He may be very attractive, most beautiful, but is he going to allow me to come and see? So then he came back and he narrated that story of Oho Bakiyan Stanakala Kutam. Yes, he is the most merciful. There is nobody as merciful as Krishna. Then Sukadev Goswami returned back and learned from Vyasdev the whole Bhagavatam.
It's interesting that Vyasadev guaranteed him, you won't be exploited. Right? Just as the verse here prophesies, you won't be exploited. Yes, Mother Manamati.
Thank you for explaining that about Vyasadev. I had always this doubt in my mind or unclarity, is that, so you know, when Sukadev Goswami came out and it was because of his faith in Krishna, he comes out and describes, like you were saying, that the ladies felt embarrassed in front of Vyasadeva, but not in front of Sukadev Goswami. However, we understand that Vyasadeva is on a higher platform, in the sense that he had already written, he wanted to give his son the Bhagavad Purana, and it is later on that Shukadeva Goswami was attracted by his father's presentation. It's a little, I don't know if my question is clear, but he was not, in other words, he was not attracted with, he was not interested in what maybe Vyasadeva was giving at that time, and that was he wanted to give his son the Bhagavatam and teach the Bhagavatam, but he wasn't ready, but it is later on he got inspired because he was not impersonal, but I don't know what the word was that Shukadeva Goswami was. Maybe some clarity.
Well, there seem to
that?
Be two questions there. One being why Sukadev did not embarrass the girls, but Vyasadeva did, even though Vyasadeva was a highly advanced incarnation. And the explanation, of course, given is that he was a householder. Therefore, he was obviously making a distinction between male and female forms, whereas Sukadev was an avadut at that point, you know, not any, you know, nothing like that. The second question, this is the advantage of our going back to the first canto, is we get to examine this timeline very carefully, exactly of this eventful circumstance, because it is a crucial timeline to our understanding the development of the Bhagavatam. And what's that they say? I'm not going to be the plot spoiler. We'll just let that sit for the next few weeks and we'll figure all that out as we go. Was that artful enough dodging of that question?
Well, I need the answer to that question.
As they say, to be continued. All right, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.